Oh, the shape that will get. You've got all the fans down.
Can we not lock it?
It's a fact. I'm not playing mind games. I'm talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladici, I would probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
Yes, another week has gone by with no football, but fear not, we're here with you on Team 33, bringing you some football goodness, especially League of Ireland. We're missing the League of Ireland on these Friday nights, and that is why we're going to be starting our new section tonight, LOI Legends. Liam Coyle, the former Derry City player, is going to join me on the line and a call here with you for the next hour or so. Like I said, we're going to be talking to Liam Coyle. He's just such a fantastic player, such a fantastic person, and really a brilliant story that's going to be coming your way for the next hour or so. If you want to follow us on Twitter, get us at Team33, all spelled out in words. If you want to listen back to any of this, go to offtheball.com/podcast. Now, I'm not going to waste too much time before I get into this Liam Coyle interview. I just want to check in, say hello to everyone. Hope you're getting on okay. I know it's tough times, but we will get through this, and hopefully this is just a welcome distraction for you over the next hour or so on this Friday night. So without further ado, here's my interview with former Derry City player Liam Coyle.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
What does that mean?
Fit to spit?
I don't really know what you mean.
Angry, upset, frustrated, steaming.
No.
Only in sex masochism. Then it is allowed.
Well, I appreciate you not putting my hair, thank you.
Okay.
Where did this ferocious determination out there today come from?
The media. Every one of them brought us off.
Somebody's out to get me. We've been shagged by Dublin. We've been ridden rock solid by people in Dublin.
Had you known more pressure on you, more questions about you in your 19-year tenure here?
Nah, it's absolute bollocks.
Did you think coming in with a 69 that you could even consider yourself six shots back?
It's the first round of the golf tournament. Just calm yourself. There's an awful long way to go yet.
Hurry up, man.
Joe Wallace, congratulations.
What is it, Brendan?
What would it be? Let me think. I'm not sure. I'll have to think about that one. Think about it deeply.
So you're not going to draw me in it, and you have a look at all the facts you'll see, and I've no comment to make.
You've made your name as a wheeler and dealer. There's not been much wheeling and dealing, has there?
No, I'm not a wheeler and dealer.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean like that.
Don't say that. I'm a fucking football man.
Now, I'm delighted to be joined by Liam Coyle on the line. Liam, how are you?
How are you doing, Anna?
Not too bad. How are things up in Derry?
Well, probably, I'd say pretty much like everywhere else, pretty surreal at the minute, I think, and, quite quiet and strange days, like, you know.
Are you stuck in the house?
We are indeed. Everybody's been told to stay in, and you only have to go out for essentials at the minute, you know, so I think most places have closed down up here. The only places really open now are shops and petrol stations.
How have you found it so far? Are you bored yet? Are you keeping busy, or how are you?
Well,
I was
working up until yesterday, and then our company then decided that, you know, they follow guidelines like everybody else. They decided they send everybody home until further time. So I've only been in the house one day, so it's not been too bad for me. But I know from last week there's been a lot of people I know that have had to leave work early, so it's strange. It's really crazy at the moment, you know.
Yeah, very strange time indeed. So you're joining us as part of our League of Ireland Legends series now. This is episode one. We decided to do this because there are no League of Ireland games on TV at the minute. There's no League of Ireland games taking place at the minute because of this. So we decided to look back at some of the legends of the game. You started your career back in the 80s, probably the best year for Derry. But I want to start from the start, probably. Growing up in Derry, did you play much football?
In the 70s when the Troubles were just starting off, I grew up in the Brandywell area, which is right beside the Bog Side, you know, so the only thing we really had growing up was football, so, you know, it was like probably like every footballer, you know, morning, noon and night out in the street, so, and that's where it started for me, like, you know, and then went to the Long Tower School, there where I met my teacher, Jimmy McCartney, who played a bit of football, and he played for our local side, Brando Harps, and just at that time, they decided then they started a junior side as well, underage team. So that's where it all started for me, probably at the Long Tower School.
How did you find growing up, like you said, in the bog side of Derry during the Troubles? Did it impact much on your general life?
Not really, Andy, because the fact of the matter is when you're in the middle of it, it doesn't really bother you. You know, it's one of them things. You just learn to cope with it and learn to deal with it. And, you know, and as I say, football for a lot of my friends and myself was the escape, you know. And like, I had a lot of friends who were involved in the struggle up here as well too. So, you know, it could have went either way for me. Like, you know, you could easily have went down that road. And fortunately for me, I was decent enough at football that gave me the opportunity to stay away from it.
Yeah, and you obviously had that football background as well. Your dad played in the 1958 World Cup, I hear?
He did, yeah. My father played for Derry in the early 50s, and then he went to Coleraine, and then he went to Nottingham Forest, and while he was at Nottingham Forest, he got picked for the 58 World Cup. But he came back to Coleraine then, and ended up playing, finished his career at Derry again.
And would he have a big impact on your career from the get-go? Would he have been very pushy to get you to play football as much as you can, or was he very much
No, my father was never like that. My father was very laid back, very easy going, and never really pushed me into anything, you know. And cause I think my father knew himself, you know, it doesn't matter how much pushing you do or how much you take an interest, if you don't want to do it, you're not going to do it. And my father just basically left me to it, you know, myself, and I think it was better for it that way, you know.
Yeah, without him having a direct influence in terms of getting you into the game, would you have looked up to him as a hero at that point? This is what I can achieve if I put my head down. I could play at a World Cup like him.
Not really, because my father was a massive hero to a lot of people in Derry. You know, he was the first Derry man to play in the World Cup. You know, and at that time he was, he was a captain Derry when they won their only league title up here, and he won the cup up here. So my father was just like an idol, like a god to a lot of people up around these parts, you know, not in these parts, but Coleraine as well, where he spent most of his career. And when you're up, my father, as I say, was very quiet, never really spoke much about his achievements or done anything. He would have give you a bit of advice now and again, but, you know, I think I never put myself under any pressure to try and emulate anything that he did, you know.
And would other people have? Would people have saw you and said, "Oh, you're lame, call your face, son. You're the footballer's son, essentially."
Yep, that's basically what happened. And like I had an older brother who played for Derry when Derry commanded the league at the start, you know, in around 85, and he really struggled with the comparisons, so to speak, with my father, you know, because people just wanted everybody to, you know, they see Faye Coyle's son playing, you know, and he struggled with it. But I think up around these parts, you know, that people just wanted to see you doing well, and, you know, and that brought pressure with it. But for me, you know, I just played. It didn't bother me too much what people said. And I think being Faye Coyle's son was more of a help than a hindrance to me, like, you know.
Right, and you start off your career essentially at Derry, but you spend a year with Finn Harps. I remember Ryan McBride, God rest him, when he was talking about playing for Derry, he had such passion for the club that he said, growing up in the shadows of the Brandywell, that some kids dream of playing for Manchester United, but all he ever dreamed of was playing for Derry City. Would that have been your mindset as well, or did you have bigger dreams than playing for Derry City at the time?
Well, I went to Nottingham Forest. I was at Nottingham Forest from I was 13 until I was 16. And I signed, when I had 16 then, I signed a year's apprenticeship. But I came back home after 3 months, you know, because I couldn't settle. So at that time, there was no, Derry City weren't in the league. So I'd had a flavour of going to England and seeing what it was about. So when Derry commanded the league, the only thing that mattered to me was, you know, trying to play for Derry City. That, nothing else. I didn't care about getting away and going back to England again, because I knew how difficult it was for some people, me included. So my main focus was just to play for Derry City, nobody else. And even at the time when we won the treble and there was all the talk about me going here, going there, going everywhere, I wasn't interested. I was just happy. I would have been happy to stay at Derry City for the rest of my career, and that was the only thing that ever mattered to me.
How come you never settled abroad? Were you just a home bird at heart?
Well, I was very, very, very quiet when I was younger. You know, very. I was very shy. And you go to England and you're through Andy Diggs with another 20, 25 youngsters the same age, and you've hardly ever been away from home. You know, so I just found it difficult, There was a couple of Derry fellas there at the time, Gary Fleming, who was there at the time, and you guy and David Campbell, who both played for Northern Ireland. They were there at the time, but I just found it so difficult. And as I say, probably being as quiet as I was at the time, it didn't help me. If I had been maybe a wee bit more outgoing and a bit more confident,
yeah,
I probably would have stayed, you know. But unfortunately, like, the way I look at it, just it wasn't meant to be. And lucky enough, you know, at that time, Derry were making strides to getting back into senior football again when I came back.
Yeah, and when you do come back, you make your debut in probably the best season Derry have ever had, and it's probably one of the best debuts Derry have ever had as well. You scored a hat-trick against Cove Ramblers. What was that feeling like, even just coming onto the pitch, first of all, and then as the goals go in, are you thinking, I can't believe this is happening, or what's going through your head at that point?
Well, first and foremost, like, you know, I replaced Noel Larkin, who was one of my heroes, you know, growing up, and not only a hero as a footballer, but a great man as well too. So when I come on a sub for Largo, was carrying an injury, so Jim McLaughlin tried him, didn't work out, and they brought me on after about half an hour. So and I just come on, and you don't think about things. You know, I was one of them players that I never thought about how I was ever going to play. I just went out and played, you know. So that always worked in my favour, so to speak. So I think when the first goal was in, you say, right, well, that's a decent debut, you know. And then the second one goes in, you're going, well, it's turning out now a really pretty good day, like. So, and then about 3 or 4 minutes ago, you get a hat trick again, and it just turned my life upside down, like, you know, so to speak. So it was great, you know. It's just great to get on the pitch and pull on the Derry jersey and play with all them players that went on the make history in Derry City's history and League Ireland history, you know.
What does Jim McLaughlin say to you after that game? Or can you remember?
Well, I can't remember it, but Jim was one of them managers. He doesn't say an awful lot, to you know. That's Jim was so good at saying small things, the little things that made you think about the game, you know. Jim was never one to go off and rant or tell you were this or tell you were that, you know. So I think McLaughlin was good at just, at you know, making you believe in how good a player you were. And and after the match, like, you know, he came up and said to me, well done and stuff like that. And and it was Jim. I loved him, still love him, and you know, looking back on now, but you're bringing, I haven't thought about these things in so long, so they think back on that day when he came up to me and shook my hand. I think it was one of the best days I ever had, you know.
When I was researching for this piece, one of the things that kept coming up time and time again about Jim McLaughlin was the word genius.
Yep.
Was he a genius?
Absolutely. Like, there's, you know, Jim was great at seeing what people had, you know, and you know, I always remember Mick Neville telling me a story about when Mick came from Drogheda to Shamrock Rovers, you know, and Mick said he struggled for the first couple of months, and then Jim took him home and stayed in Jim's house, and Jim said to him, look, this is the way it is. You need to start doing this, believing in yourself and stuff like that. And Mick Neville went on to have one of the greatest careers in League Ireland football and became one of the best players in League Ireland football. So McLaughlin was great at just pinpointing, you know, what people were good at and what they could do. And, you know, you didn't have to be the best player in the world, but he could have made you the best player that you could have been. So, you know, I don't think, you know, probably Stephen Kenny's as close to Jim as you're going to get in modern times. Like, you know, and I think... But I think when it comes down, they have to. I think McLaughlin will be seen as arguably the best manager the league has ever seen.
Was he a tactical manager at the time, or was he very much, like you're saying, just saying the right things to the right players?
It was, you know, the year we won the treble, we used to train three, maybe four times a week. You know, and Jim, it was all... ball work, you know, we never went out and done tactical and thought about what way the other team were playing. It's a bit like Alex Ferguson, when you hear Roy Keane talking about Alex Ferguson, you know, it was our people talking to training, you know, and Ferguson done all the stuff about how to get into people's heads, and Jim was very like that, you know, and Jim always felt that if we were good enough, we would have beat anybody, and it wouldn't have mattered, you know, what anybody else did. So he was very instinctive as a manager. You know, he could see things very quickly. And I think, you know, when you look at coaches or look at managers now, they need four people behind them to tell them how to make a sub. You know, I look at League Ireland managers now at the minute, and they have four people up talking to them at the one time. McLaughlin would have just seen it straight away and went, right, we need to change this. Right. We need to be doing this. And that's how good a manager he was.
And outside of the obvious, because I have the squad in front of me, so you have the likes of McNeville, Felix Healy, Paul Hegarty, Paul Doolan, yourself, Noel Larkin, some of the best players to ever play in the League of Ireland, in the history of the League of Ireland. What made this team so special?
When Jim was made manager after Noel King had left, you know, Jim was, it was still Noel King's side, you know, it was still Noel King's team, and then Jim got them to the final in 88, where Dundalk beat them, and then straight after the match, and I remember him telling me, straight after the match, they were beat 1-0 with Dundalk, he just said, right, I need to change about 7 or 8 players here, because if I keep the same team, I'm never going to challenge the ice, so he's never going to challenge. So, fortunately, I think for Jim also at that time, you know, Shamrock Rovers had just lost, you know, they'd moved away from Glenmalure, and they were, all the players that were so successful were moving on. You know, Mick moved on, as you say, Duller, Kevin Brady, and Larkin, Noel Larkin was going to retire, but Jim talked him out of it, you know. So I think bringing them group of players together, they showed everybody what it was about, you know, how they won trophies. You know, you had Felix Healy played in the World Cup in 82. Felix was arguably the best player that I ever played with, you know. You know, but the Doolans, the Nevilles, Brady, and then he brought John Cody as well from Chelsea, who had also been in Shamrock Rovers. You could see the difference between them players and the players who had been there before. You know, they showed players how they won trophies, and, you know, that for me was the big difference, you know. And also you add onto the mix, you know, that every player probably at that time was, you know, I was the youngest player in the squad in the team that time, me and Michelle, Paul Hegarty, Paul Carlisle as well, who were just a bit older than me. But I think everybody at that time were just coming to their best, you know, we're all hitting their peak, like, you know. And you talk about people now about, you know, fullbacks, you know, playing the way they do now as extra attackers. Like, we were playing that way 30 years ago. No, Pascal Vodacan couldn't defend. He was more or less playing as a right-sided midfielder. You know, Kevin Brady was up and down the line. Like, so there was a great balance and a great mixture, but obviously the main ingredient was Jim himself, you know, because everybody just really loved playing for him.
Yeah, and that was actually going to be my next question, was because most of these games wouldn't have been televised, it's very hard to actually find games from the treble-winning season. So what was the brand of football? Because I know in Derry City at the minute, with Declan Devine, a former teammate of yourself, there is a real ethos around playing football the right way, having it on the deck and moving it about as quick as possible. Would that have been Jim McLaughlin's style as well?
Absolutely. You know, like most teams that came to play us, you know, 10 men behind the ball, you know. So we used to play, you know, everybody talks about Dundalk now, you know, the way Dundalk are, the way they play, you know, but we were playing that way 30 years ago because teams used to come and sit and just try and have us in the break. And, you know, we had the ball for maybe 90% of possession every game we played at the Bradwell. And, you know, and Jim was always saying, be brave on the ball, get on the ball as much as you can, doesn't want to see it. You know, obviously, we had no Larkin there who, if we were struggling, you could bring Larko either played or come on, you know, because he was, Larko was 36, 37 at the time, so he wasn't going to play all games. But if we were struggling and we had to go long, Jim would have said, right, get Larko on and play. So Jim never seen one way of winning football matches. He said, there's so many ways of winning football games. You don't have to be one of these teams that are great to watch and play it and keep a ball and get bit 1-0. He said, if you have to get it up there, get it up there. So it was never a case of, you know, playing one way or trying to be the best team that, you know, was you ever seen playing ways. But McLaughlin just won football matches, you know, and at the end of the day you can play and have as much success as you want, but if you don't win football games, then nobody's going to remember you.
Yeah, and do you think that diversity in style is the reason why nobody else has done it since that? Because Dundalk, they came very, very close to it this year, but they fell short in the FAI Cup final, so it is a really difficult thing to do.
That's so difficult, but you know, and as much as you need a good side and you need good teams, they play on a good player side, they play on, you know, you also need to carry a bit of luck, you know. You need, you know, football is all about luck as well. Like, you know, I remember talking to Dave Barry about it. Like, Dave played against us in the final for Cork, and there was two finals. Obviously, the first one we drew 0-0. Like, we 5 minutes to go, Dave has to inside the post in a volley. You know, if that goes either way, you know, we wouldn't be talking about the treble 30 years later, you know. So also, and you know, that's a difficult thing to do, because when I look at it, like, I always thought after we'd done it that I think we should have done it the following season. We came second in the league, we lost the cup, the semi-final down in Braham, we lost the league cup, so we could have done it again, only for luck, you know, because that's the way it is. And you look at all the teams down the years that I've played against, the likes of Bowes, Shelburne, you know, Shamrock Rovers, you know, teams that were top players but just couldn't do it. And you look at this Dundalk team now, who are supposedly the best team in modern history, like, you know, and they still can't do it, even with all the resources that they have at their exposure. So it's hard to explain why it hasn't been done, but I think ultimately you need good players, but you need a lot of luck as well to do it.
Yeah, and the season comes to an end, Derry win the treble, and it all comes to the peak when you're called up to the Northern Irish team. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I sort of knew it was going to be called, because I was picked to play in what they called a B International at Daly Mount Park about 3-4 weeks before it, against the Republic. And it was sort of for players that were just on the fringes of the squad. I mean, Dennis Irwin played that night. I think Dennis Irwin played at Daly Mount Park. I think it was his first time for the Republic. But I got injured on the Saturday, on the Sunday, against Shamrock Rovers, but I still had to go to Dublin, but I couldn't play because I was injured. So I knew then, Billy Bingham had said to me, look, there's an international coming up at the end of the month, I want to try and include you in it. So I knew myself that it was coming, you know. I just had to keep playing and playing well for Derry at the time. So, but it was a nice thing. It was a nice thing for Derry City at the time, you know, because we were coming off the back of the troubles were still ongoing, you know, and the club were just making a name. The club were only back in the league for 4 years, so relatively a new club. So for one of the players to get an international cap so early on, I think it was great recognition for him, but it was great recognition for everybody, not just myself, you know.
Can I ask why you chose Northern Ireland? Because obviously it's tumultuous times as it is, and as someone who grew up in the bog side, it would have been probably different to what some players like James McLean and others have done in this period. So how come you chose Northern Ireland over the Republic?
Because basically there was no Good Friday Agreement, you know, and you couldn't pick for the Republic of Ireland at the time. You were born in the north, so you had to play for the north, you know. And because I was sort of holding out for the Republic, they make advances, and I knew behind the scenes that there was talks being held about it. But because there was no Good Friday Agreement at that time, and you know the reason why James and Darren Gibson and people like that there who all had that option. My father played for Northern Ireland as well too, so that sort of went against me not playing for the Republic as well too, so I had to go that way. But I think if it had happened to me after 1998, probably would have been a different choice for me.
Okay, and what's the reaction in both camps? So you go, obviously the game's in Windsor Park, it's against Chile. What's the reaction from firstly the home fans, and then did it change your relationship with some of the more staunched Republican fans of Derry City at the time?
No, that never harmed me that way. I know some people were annoyed by it, you know, because as you say, I come from the Bradwell area of the town. I know that friends who were on the Republican movement, and I think that, you know, they never held it against me, but I think they were disappointed that I played, you know. So, for Derry City fans, it never harmed me in any way that way, like, you know what I mean. And as for going to Windsor and play, it was surreal to me because I had a stand for the national anthem, you know, the British national anthem. And I found it difficult. I really found it difficult, you know, and I was looking at it. I didn't know how to stand. I didn't know because I knew that people would have been scrutinising it. So, you know, and even then, like, you know, I was coming from Derry, you know, and I don't think there was about maybe 6,000 or 7,000 at the match that night. I don't know. Can't really remember. But, you know, I remember warming it up and I was getting booed. So you were saying to yourself, like, this is my own fans booing me. What's this all about? Like, you know what I mean? So, but, you know, I have to say, the players, you know, the players themselves were absolutely fantastic. People like, you know, Norman Whiteside and Mal Donaghy and Alan McDonald and people like that who were Dave McCreary. They were really, really good to me, and they looked after me. But, you know, unfortunately, like at the time, politics was a big thing in the north, and you know, it doesn't matter what you do, you're always going to upset somebody.
Yeah, that's true. And this is, I said, this was a peak for you. It was definitely a peak at the start of your career, and then probably the following year. It starts off brilliantly. You play in Europe against Benfica, but then comes a very, very nasty injury and probably the low point in your career, if I'm correct in saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was the lowest point, not just my career, my life. I think outside of my mother and my father dying, I think that was the lowest point I ever got in my life, you know. So, that's one of them things. It was just a bad knock that day down in Dundalk, you know, and it's injuries that people run off very easily, but turns out that I was carrying some sort of condition in my knee that, you know, it was going to come out eventually, but the knock that day. But I think, like, you know, when you're young, you think, yeah, it's an injury, I'll get over it quickly, but then when you're told then by doctors and surgeons that, look, you need to stop playing here, otherwise you're going to end up you're going to end up in a bad way. You know, you're going to need knee replacements and possibly walking about in crutches and stuff. So, you know, at that time, you know, the information wasn't as forward now as it is, you know, as it is today. Like, I think if it had happened today, the information and the care taken towards the injury probably would have been different, you know, but that was one of them things. I just had to get on with it then, like, you know.
Yeah, what's interesting about this is we actually had Tom Parsons, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, the Mayo footballer that had a horrific knee injury a couple of seasons ago. His knee was dislocated in two different places. The ligaments were done, the interior cruciate was damaged as well, and he was saying that he was told by doctors that he may never run again, let alone play. And after about a year and a half, he was back on the pitch again. So that's probably the difference in what modern science can do in terms of these injuries.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think at the time, when I got the probe done in England, I got it done on Hull, which at that time had the top knee surgeon in England, you know, and he'd done the whole thing, and then they discovered this condition I had, but you see, mine wasn't so much an injury as like a arthritic condition, so they didn't know how they treat it. So I think now, as you say, you're talking about that fella there now, I think what happened now, the whole approach would have been different. You would have been given the rehabilitation would have been better. The care would have been better. And so, I think at the time, I think everything was maybe done too quickly concerning telling me to stop, whereas they hadn't maybe had to give me a year out. It might have rectified itself, which basically it did, you know.
Yeah, and you took the decision to retire from the game at such a young age. What's that like for you mentally?
Oh, it was absolutely terrible because, as I told you way at the start there, I was pretty quiet, you know, growing up, and football was the only thing I was really, really ever good at, you know, and it was the thing that brought me out of my shell. But, you know, and then to be told then that you can't do it was so difficult. It was difficult for not just me, but for my mother and father, you know, who just loved seeing me playing for Derry. And I think watching them and, you know, going through everything that I was going through, looking back on it, was really difficult for me now, like, you know what I mean? So, and when you start playing and you've so much time in your hands, you're not working either, and the thing that you turn to is, you know, you turn to going out and trying to enjoy yourself, putting on a face, and the next thing you know, you're getting caught up in, you know, a cycle where you're just doing it all the time. And that's when I realised then that things had gone too far for me that way, you know.
And how do you get out of that? I'm sure it must have been a really tough time at the time. And what stops you from getting into these cycles?
I had to go and get counselling and stuff like that, you know, because I could feel my life spiralling away from me, you know, and it was difficult. I couldn't see any way out, and then I was, you know, was becoming more depressed, and you were finding it difficult to do things. And then, long enough, I got talking to somebody, and they put me in touch with a counsellor, and it sort of brought me out of it, you know, and made me realise, like, you know, still pretty young, you know, I was only 22, 23 at the time. So, and basically what I said was, look, I'm going to go back playing here again. I'm going to go back playing junior, and I just went back playing junior football again with no intention other than just to enjoy it, and, you know, make me realise, you know, that, you know, this is what it's all about here. And unfortunately enough, for myself, when I went back playing again, you know, I started getting people started coming to watch me again, and thinking, right, maybe we can get them back involved in senior football again.
So, like you said, you went back to football. You went back to Omagh, was it?
I went back playing. I went back playing junior here, Derry and Dustic football here with Brandwell Harps, and we were playing summer cup footballs, you know, during the summer where you play different cups for prize money and stuff like that. And I was doing really well. I was kind of a wee bit of weight, but I was doing well, scoring goals, and people were coming out to watch me. And then Roy McCready, who was manager of OMA, so I was still wary of it because I didn't want to come back play, because I knew it would have upset people in Derry that I'd retired and then I made a comeback again, you know what I mean? So I thought long and hard about it, but Roy taught me on that, because Roy, I've known Roy a few years, you know, and he'd done a good job at OMA, gave a lot of young fellas in Derry a chance that weren't maybe good enough to play for Derry, a chance on the senior football, and taught me on that, and it went well. Like, we weren't a great side, but it went well, enjoyed it, and for me, that was just a fact of just playing, enjoying it. I was never looking towards going anywhere or playing it for anybody else. But come the end of the season, you know, the likes of Lampfield, and I nearly signed for Glentoran, and then Derry came in at the last minute and brought me back again.
Did you have to change your style of play at all to accommodate for the injury? Did you find yourself almost overcompensating to protect the knee?
I wasn't particularly the quickest anywhere when I broke on that team, but I definitely took more yards off me, you know, so had I learned to play a different way. Like, I used to play, you know, right up and go and pick people on and that, but I found myself dropping deeper, and because I was a good passer, the ball, and I could see things, and I found myself dropping maybe under the 10 row when before I would have been a 9, you know. So I think that definitely. Now, the knee itself, you know, I wore a big strapping on it to protect it, and I didn't really train much with Oma. They allowed me just to play games and stuff like that. So I never put it under too much stress or pressure, and I think that helped me, you know. And you know, by the end of the season, then I'd lost the weight that I was carrying. I'd lost that, and I was looking after myself better. So I think, and then once you know, I think if you're a good enough player, I think you can more or less play how you see fits you best. Like, you know what I mean, rather than playing they suit other people. So no, I definitely changed the way I played, but I don't think it made me a worse player for it, you know.
Were you emotional when you came back to Derry?
Very emotional. Very emotional. I went to play a game for Roma up at Dungannon, a pre-season game. And at that time, we're still playing from August to April, you know. And I was on the verge of signing for Glen Torn, and I've been talking to Glen Torn for a few weeks, and Robert Stain, who was the manager at the time, and a really really nice fella, nice guy, like, and I was more or less going there, but I went and played a match, and Paul Key, who was the manager, Oma, just said to me, coming down, he said, look, there's a club's come in for him, we're going to accept it. And I thought it was Lumpfield, because I knew Lumpfield had been sniffing about, and I said, look, I'm not going to Lumpfield. And he said, it's not Lumpfield, he said, it's Derry. And he said, I think we're going to get it, because I think Derry will suit you better than going to Glen Torn. So as soon as he said that, I remember getting out of his car and going to my mother's house, and I remember breaking down and telling my mother that Derry had wanted to sign me again. So it was very, very, very emotional for me, and because I never ever thought that after I left that I would ever get the chance to come back and play against him.
Yeah, it's an incredible journey, and I suppose you repay Derry with trophies and with appearances off the pitch and goals, and basically in the latter stages of your career, you may not be as quick as you once were, but you were definitely as effective anyway by the looks of it. Talk to me about the 2002 FAI Cup final against Shamrock Rovers, because this is a big one for you.
Well, it was, because I played in four finals before that and haven't scored in a couple of semi-finals, and in 2002, like, you know, they were just coming out off the back of you know, money troubles. It was hard times for them. After we won the league in 97, from then to about 2002, you know, Felix Elliott left, and Kevin Mahan had come in and steadied the ship, but basically there was no money, you know. We were just bringing kids through, and it was myself and Peter Hutton, Sean Hargan, Gary Beckett, who from 97, and then you were basically bringing people through every year. So winning trophies and competing with the likes of Shelburne and Bowes and was difficult at that time, and St Pat's, you know, so Cork, you know. But 2002, I think we were a young side. Kevin Mahan we didn't do well in the league. We were really struggling, but we had a good cup run, and we got to the final against Shamrock Rovers, and it was touch or go where I was going to be playing, you know. I think Gary Beckett, Gary had been excellent, and I had been sort of struggling with injuries. And we got down, they were training, I think we're down around Bray or somewhere training, we were staying down there before the cup final, and Gary said he wasn't fit to play, so Kevin said to me, right, you're starting tomorrow. So it was either touch or go where I was going to play or not. But I don't think that the final itself, I don't think it was a great game, you know. I think it was one of them games, you know. It was scrappy, it was two teams were, and Rovers, on paper had a better side than us. They were a more experienced team than us, and we were just, you know, it was one of them finals where it was going to take something different. They won the match, you know, so just after half time, I didn't play well in the final, I have to say, but one just came over my shoulder from a corner, and I just happened to swing on it, and I seen the ball. I didn't really see it. I heard the roars because it was just basically a lot of bodies in front of me when I had it, and the next thing I heard the roar, so I knew it scored in. But I think I owed Derry a goal, because as I say, I played in four finals before that, and a final in the north, and hadn't scored a goal so in the final. So I had to prove that it wasn't just more than, you know, it's a bit like the Thierry Henry one, where people say Thierry Henry never really done it in big matches. They played in something like 10 finals, only scored in one or something. So you're like, oh, I need to do something here. But fortunately enough, it was good enough they get one day the cup that day, you know.
Is your final goal for Derry the biggest one of your career? I know that, looking at your honours list, I mean, you've won 2 league titles, 3 FAI Cups and 4 league cups with Derry. But to keep them up in... keep them basically in the Premier Division, which, like you said, Derry were struggling for money at this point, it would have been a massive thing for them. In the relegation playoff against Finn Harps in 2003, that is your final goal for Derry, isn't it?
Well, it was my last appearance as well, you know. So, as I say, that the last 2 years at Derry was just riddled with injuries, you know. I just couldn't shake. Every injury seemed to last months, you know, and I was like coming back and I was maybe picking up another one. So going into that playoff final, I'd get injured the week before, coming into training before the first matchup at Fan Park. It was a two-legged, and it was 0-0, and Mark Farn, God rest Mark had just come on the scene as well too. So Mark had scored in a few games at the end of the season, because I was out injured. Mark came in for me, and then coming into the playoff final then, the second leg in the Brandywell, like the pressure that night was unbelievable. As more pressure than any game I'd ever been involved in with Derry, because as you quite rightly say, you highlighted the importance of it there. I think if Derry had to get relegated, it would have taken them years to get back again, you know, because players would have left. You wouldn't have had the same appetite to stay, and you would have struggled to bring players in. So I think that night, and I remember Mark had scored and made it 1-0 for us, but he was struggling near the end of the match, and I was struggling with an injury, and there was only about 3 or 4 minutes to go. And I remember Gavin Dykes, who was caretaker manager at the time, said to me, "Look, it's need you to go on, hold the ball up in the corner for the last 3 or 4 minutes that we see this out." So come on, I was struggling. I didn't really want to go on, but I went on. And I got a ball up in the corner and had it in there for about 3 minutes. And Harps won a throw in, and they broke down the left, and they scored me about 30 seconds ago. And I remember turning around saying to Sean Harkin, "I'm never going to last another half an hour here." You know, so I think... So anyway, got the extra time, and then I'd scored in the first period of extra time, and it was probably the worst goal I'd ever scored for you, to be quite honest. If you ever look at it in the thing, it's an absolutely shocking piece of defending from the Harps defenders that they keep it out, but it sneaked its way in. And I remember at the end of the game, you know, just people running on the pitch to me and crying and hugging me and throwing scarves around me, and you could just see what it meant to them that they weren't relegated, you know. So in many ways, it was the most important goal, because I think if that goal hadn't went in, you wouldn't have the 2 or 3 years that Stephen Kenny had up here, you know. You'd have been struggling to get out of the first division, you wouldn't have had all them European nights, and you wouldn't have had the years I probably would have got back, but it might have taken a bit longer. But I think staying up that year was vital for Derry City and their history, you know.
And it's a lovely way to end your career with the club as well.
Well, it was because I knew the injuries I was having wasn't going. Like Derry had asked me to stay on for another year, but I thought to myself, this is not what I want to do. I don't want people to think I'm just here to take them the money and living off my reputation and stuff like that. And as soon as the game was over, I just waited. I knew myself I was going to play on, but I waited a couple of weeks and then I went and told the board and stuff like that. So I think it was a fitting way to go. I think when you know your race is run, there's no point in trying to get any more out of it, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what a lot of people say when they're coming to the end of the career. That when they get some players, they don't ever get the opportunity to end on a high note, and a lot of players end with fans talking about how they're constantly injured and they're in and out of the team and they can't nail a point. And in some ways that ends in a bit of hostility towards that player, whereas you get to have this legacy now off the, you end your career on this high.
Well, you know, I think players love playing that much that they, you know, they think, you know, I'm just going to keep going on here and going on and going on, And I look at Jason Byrne. I love Jason. I think he's a great fella and one of the top strikers of all time. But I think what Jason tried to do the last couple of years, you know, trying to beat Brenton Bradley's record, you know, you say to yourself, Jay, give it up now. Like, you know what I mean? It's not going to happen, dropping down leagues and playing. And that was never going to happen to me because it offers to go and play in the Irish League and play with Fun Harps and play for OMA and Institute and stuff like that. But I just knew myself. I said, no, it's not going to happen because I don't want, as you quite rightly said, I don't want people turning around. I don't want people turning around and saying, you know, when I walked out on the pitch, oh, look, he can't run, he can't get after that, he's no good now, he just stands up there. And because I was always a player that wanted to be involved in everything when I was playing, you know, and I just hated the thought that people would be thinking, he's only doing it for the money, you know, he's only staying there for the money. And I knew at that time that the decision I made was the right one, and as you say, quite rightly, because I think I don't think it's harmed me up here at all with the Derry fans.
Yeah, and Liam, you've been brilliant with your time. Just want to ask you a few more questions before I let you go. The current Derry City side, what do you make of them? I know you played alongside Declan Devine. They're coming forward a good bit. They've made strides last year, especially.
Well, last year especially, it was a great job they did last year. You know, because the mess that they were left on after Kenny Shields left, you know, was for any manager coming in, was going to be a difficult job, you know, and they brought a lot of players in last year. Most of them worked, you know, and which helped them with a great base, you know, and then, but unfortunately they lost Junior Zogwe and Getty, and they lost David Parkhouse, who scored something like 40 goals between them last year, which was always going to be difficult to replicate, you know. This year's been a difficult start for them, you know. It brought a lot of players in, just hasn't had, well, they've only played four games, you know, so, but there was a sense, you know, that they weren't hitting the same heights as they did last year. Obviously, it's going to take a bit of time, you know, but I think the job at Declan's done with his background staff as well, you know, Paddy McCord, Kevin Derry, Marty McCann there as well too. So all players know the club, all ex-players know the club, and they brought that back, that community feeling that was lost, I think, over the last couple of years. And you know, if they keep going, and they have a great chairman of Philip O'Doherty, you know, the Brandywell Stadium is looks like a stadium now, looks like a proper place we can go and watch a match. I'm not keen on the pitch right now for 3G, but everything's a place there for Derry to move forward over the next couple of years. And I think if Declan can keep a good squad of players there between now and the end of the season, then he'll have a good go at it over the next couple of years.
And that kind of leads me into my final question as well nicely, is anybody who knows Derry City knows what the club is about, and there's a real feel that it's in the city, that it's Derry City first, and whoever comes after that is a different story. And you hear players like the late Ryan McBride, how he spoke about the club, how Paddy McCourt has come back, James McLean has spoken very highly about the club, says he wants to finish his career at the club. What is it that makes Derry City so special for those who don't actually know the club?
Well, you know, we're from the north up here, as you know, we're from the north up here. So, you know, you go to Dublin, you have St Pat's, you have Bowes, you have Shamrock Rovers, you have Shelburne, you have Bray Wanderers, you know, UCD. There's seven or eight clubs in around the Dublin area. And then you have likes of Cork, Derry, you know, Drogheda maybe, and Dundalk, you know. They're all local clubs, you know, with basically one club one football team in the city, and that's what the I have. Like, you have Institute here playing the Irish League, but you know, but they're not really classed as, you know, in the same level as the I. They're a good run football club, but they're nowhere near the level that the I is. And no matter what you say, like, you know, Derry is based in a very nationalist area, in the Brandywell area, in the heart of the Bog side. So you have all the surrounding areas, and it's very community-led, and everybody knows each other. Everybody knows who comes to games, you know. And I always say that the players I talk to, I said, try and get to know the players, or the security that does it get, that the gears that make the tea, you know, get to know everybody, because, you know, it's a very, very family-run club, you know, and everybody feels as if they own it. You know, it's a strange thing to say, you know, but it is, everybody feels as if they own the football club up here. And when it's going great, it's absolutely fantastic. But it's like any football club, you know, you want to be winning football games, and they're quick to voice their opinion about how well you don't be doing at times, but I think it's all done in the right manner. I think compared to the time when we were playing, they're not as critical as they were, you know. So the football club is very special to a lot of people, obviously me, you know, because right through to my far and where I come from, but also the fact that, you know, that the people that came to watch you for so many years, you know, are all the same people that are still going to the Brandywell. They're families. It's very much a family football club, where it's generations just, you know, take over from their grandfather and their fathers. So it's a special football club. But, you know, every football club will say the same thing. You know, I played for Glentoran for a year, and they think they think exactly the same as the Derry City fans. So I think every football club has that identity, that they want to be classed as something special. And I think in these times, I think the sooner we get back to it, it'll just give everybody a wee bit of a skip and a wee lift out of the troubles we find ourselves in.
Exactly. As soon as this football gets back going, I would say there'll be crowds coming down straight away to the Brandywell. Liam Coyle.
Oh, absolutely. I think everybody just can't wait for it to start again. You know? So I think for everybody, I just hope everybody's listening, you know, believes that we're going to get back. And I think we'll start realising that football is there to be enjoyed, you know, and the times that we're in at the minute, I think people got to realise that football is to be enjoyed. There's more important things in life now than that.
Yeah, that was former Derry City player Liam Coyle there speaking to me a little earlier this week. What a fantastic story that is. And if you want to see what kind of player this is, if you haven't seen him before, just go onto YouTube. Some of his highlights are absolutely phenomenal. He is, without a doubt, one of the best players to ever grace this the pitches in the League of Ireland. Fantastic player. And really, if it wasn't for that knee injury, who knows what would have what he would have achieved, because he already achieved so much, even if you take in the account that he retired at the age of 19-20 for a couple of years because of that knee injury. He's an absolutely phenomenal player, phenomenal person as well. That's all we have time for, unfortunately, this week, though. We will be back again next week at the same time. Keep safe, everybody. Stay safe, stay well. Hopefully we'll be back again soon with some more football action. Take it away, Johan.